Today's sponsor is Ground News. Now, if there's one thing that we can all agree on, it's that the media landscape is fundamentally broken. Both social media and the press are incentivized to exaggerate our differences and amplify division. A lot of people ask me where they should go for news that they can trust, and I don't usually have a good answer for that. However, Ground News has taken a totally different approach in improving the broken media ecosystem. They're a news comparison platform, giving you the ability to compare how sources with different political biases are covering a certain story, so you can easily see if it's being spun to fit a political narrative. You can click on any article and see how balanced the coverage is. The blind spot feature allows you to see stories that are exclusively being covered by either the left or the right. This allows you to identify news that you may otherwise miss in your own bubble. Ground News is an apolitical platform. It's a place for moderates, conservatives, liberals, and the politically homeless. Try it for yourself today by downloading the free Ground News app on the App Store or Google Play Store. Just go on the store and search for Ground News. Highly recommend it. I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name. What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we've got on my friend, Michaela Peterson, who is, of course, the host of the Michaela Peterson podcast. Welcome. How are you doing?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm always good, Michaela. Always good. So we were just talking before about the fact that we're both looking at the world and we are planning on escaping our countries of origin, or perhaps have already done so. So first of all, what's your past year been like? What's it been like for you?
Well, the majority of my problems were caused because my dad was incredibly ill. So the last year was absolutely terrible. And COVID was almost the least of our issues. So I was in Moscow, January 2020, and then I was in Florida, and then I was in Serbia. I finally got back to Canada in September with my dad, and then Canada was a little bit open, not as open as Serbia, way more closed, but it was still a little bit open. And then November, everything shut down. So they were in like lockdown, stay at home mandate. And it just ruined downtown. So I live in a condo building downtown and it just wrecked it. There's nobody downtown. The homeless population skyrocketed. There's tents everywhere. And people are just nervous outside. They're just scared outside. So that was great. So I was dealing with that, which is just hard mentally. And I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have an online job. So it's not like my job was impacted. And it was still unbelievably stressful. And I'm not very stress tolerant, especially given the health crises I've been dealing with. So I'm already like, my nervous system's already shot. And then this was on top of that. So that lasted. That started in November. My dad finally started feeling significantly better in March. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, okay, I don't have to like be here anymore. I really need a break because mentally I was just like, I wasn't sleeping. Like I was just not doing well. And a lot of that was concern about my dad's health. Sure. And so as soon as that was done, I was like, I need to break. I need some sun. I was like pale. My vitamin D was at like zero from being basically in a cave for like 6 months. I was like, you know, I have the opportunity to leave and I cannot handle, you know, 3 more months of a freaking stay at home mandate. It's ridiculous. Wow. Like patios aren't open. Nothing is open. So I'm in Dubai now.
Okay, man, that's a long lot. You and your family have had certainly a rough last couple of years, but I mean, even prior to that, I mean, I've watched a lot of your podcasts and, you know, I'm aware of your story, but for people who may not know, can you kind of just give an overview of your story and some of the things that you've had to overcome, because there's a lot of it.
Sure. So, the majority of my issues were I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder when I was 7, juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, and it was incredibly severe. Like you get kids and they'll have like an inflamed knee. I had something like 37 joints affected. I didn't have my spine affected, but it was everywhere else, like my jaw, It was just like in other joints that you don't think about having arthritis in. It was everywhere. When I was 12, I was put on SSRIs for, I was having suicidal thoughts. I was medicated. I was the first kid in Canada to be put on immune suppressants for the arthritis, which initially helped, but didn't actually end up helping long-term. When I was 17, I had my hip and ankle replaced because the arthritis had destroyed my cartilage. Even though I was on immune suppressants, I'd been taking them for, well, I guess, almost 9 years at that point. And then I basically just got sicker and sicker and sicker, even though I was doing everything I could with the medical system. By the time I was 22, I was on seven medications. It was immune suppressants, SSRIs. I was taking painkillers, like just Tylenol 3 to sleep at night because the arthritis in my shoulders was really bad. I was taking Adderall to stay awake. I was diagnosed with idiopathic hypersomnia, which literally means, you know, you're really tired and we don't know why. Idiopathic hypersomnia. So I had like three seriously chronic conditions and my health was deteriorating. And then I started getting this rash that started when I was 19 and it just worsened. And so by the time I was 23, I had arthritis. I'd been diagnosed with bipolar and I had idiopathic hypersomnia and I had this rash and my skin stopped being able to heal. So that's where I was when I was 23. I switched degrees from, I had been in psychology. I switched over to biomedical science and thought, I have to figure out this medical problem because it's killing me and I'm going to die. Like this is, if my joints are disintegrating and now my skin is disintegrating, this isn't, and the medical system is like, I don't know what's wrong with you. Like I need to figure out something. And so I went back to school because I thought maybe I had to do a degree in immunology or microbiology or something. And 8 months later, I found out there was a very, very large link between gluten and autoimmunity. And a lot of people with autoimmune disorders don't know that, but there are a lot of autoimmune disorders that couple together. So if you have one, you're likely to have more eventually. And gluten can be a trigger for a lot of people with autoimmune disorders. So I thought, I got tested, and I have the celiac gene, which is an autoimmune disorder associated with consuming gluten. And I was like, oh, maybe I just have celiac disease and all these other symptoms are just connected to that. So I cut out gluten and that summer, and it helped a little bit, but I thought, okay, if I'm really going to look into diet, I'll really get strict just to rule it out. And so I went to a very strict diet of like meat, certain root vegetables like parsnips and sweet potatoes and greens. And after a month on that, my skin started to heal. I lost 3 pant sizes, even though I only lost 5 pounds. So that was really dramatic and quite lovely. my arthritis was feeling better, but mostly I noticed my skin was healing. And I was like, this is absurd. And then in the next 3 months, I'll shorten this up because it could go on forever. Yeah, but in the next 3 months, I went off of all my medications. And so I went off of my immune suppressants because I wanted to actually monitor the flare-ups to see if I could correlate them to what I was eating. I went off of Adderall because the idiopathic hypersomnia went away in about 3 months. I wasn't tired anymore. I was literally passing out. So I went from passing out to having energy. So I stopped the Adderall. And then I thought, you know what? I don't want to take any of these medications, but the huge trigger was about 3 months into this diet, my depression lifted. And my depression hadn't lifted for my like entire life. I can't remember not being depressed. And it lifted in November in Canada, which is, it starts to get dark and gloomy and it's not when you'd expect to not be depressed. And I was like, oh my God, maybe this is associated with, like maybe all these health problems are associated. They all seem to be lifting at the same time. And so I stopped my antidepressants and I only stopped them over about a 2-week period. And I was on a very high dose of SSRI and I'd been taking it since I was 11 or 12. And it turns out you can have withdrawal from SSRIs. And I had absolutely no idea that that was a thing because I'd heard of like opiate withdrawal, but I didn't know that psych medication has withdrawal. A lot of people still don't know that. And for the next 2.5 years, I had sensitized my brain by just removing this medication. I had no idea what was going on. And I sensitized myself to anything inflammatory. So lights bugged me. temperature changes bugged me. I couldn't sleep. But the biggest thing that happened was I sensitized to carbs. So I was on this very low carb diet. I was doing really well. And then I stopped my medication. 2 weeks later, I tried to reintroduce soy. And I went on Rogan to talk about this. I was like, soy made me hallucinate. Mm. It took me like 3 years to figure out, oh, I was in SSRI withdrawal. I've talked to psychiatrists about this now who actually know. I was in SSRI withdrawal. I'd sensitized my brain. And when I like threw a whole bunch of fairly inflammatory food, like in soy is not easy for people. I threw a bunch of soy at me and my brain just went haywire. So for the next year and a half, I was trying to introduce foods, having these wild autoimmune reactions, like psychiatric symptoms. And so I kind of restricted my diet to try and like get sane, because I was like, I found that sanity and then I lost it for a very long time. And I ended up on just eating meat. I was like, I went down to meat and greens. I was like, I got a little bit better, but I still wasn't feeling good. And I was like, you know what? Steak isn't hurting me. Steak isn't the problem. So I figured I'd do steak for like a month and then to reintroduce things. But it took longer to get my health back. So what I'm like, if you Google me or anything, you don't know who I am. I get a lot of, there's negative articles associated with this, you know, all beef diet, all meat diet. But I was kind of forced into that from SSRI damage and autoimmunity. However, recently, I haven't talked about this at all, that those psychiatric symptoms that used to flare up when I ate carbs seem to not be there anymore. So I think that was purely damage from the SSRIs, and that's gone. So now I'm still dealing with, like, I haven't expanded my diet very much because I still get arthritic flare-ups. But arthritis is, it's like, yeah, I get joint pain, so I should not do that because long-term joint pain is going to cause damage. But these, like, psych symptoms that were caused by the sudden cessation of SSRIs, that was completely intolerable. So that seems to be gone. Awesome. And now I'm here.
And we are glad that you are here. That's honestly, it's a lot for a young woman to deal with. And I admire the fact that you've persisted through all this and worked out, honestly, using your own ingenuity, what works for you. And yeah, some people are going to be like, oh, you only eat beef. That's really weird. That sounds crazy, whatever. But I think very much when it comes to diet, look, people should do what works for them, right? There are general rules depending on what you're trying to achieve that don't really change depending on who you are. But if you've got an autoimmune condition or something very specific, allergies, whatever, I'm very much in the camp of like, hey, if it works for you, cool, right? I'm not going to come and tell someone like, I don't want to just eat beef. But if that's what works really well for someone.
I don't want to just eat beef.
Yeah, exactly.
I hate this. No, like, honestly. Oh, well,
yeah.
Yeah, no, I really do. I mean, like, you think if I had to choose one food to only eat, it would probably be steak. So I was like, you know, thank God I don't have to survive off of potatoes or something. Yeah. But it's not ideal. It's not ideal. Like, I miss other things. Like, it's not like anyone's like, oh, thank God I don't have to eat fruit anymore.
Absolutely. What's the biggest thing you've learned through all of that? Because that is quite the ordeal. And it's not something that, honestly, it's not something that everyone, firstly, most people don't have to deal with stuff like that, let alone these multiple things stacked on top of each other. but those who do often, you know, they sort of end up in a hole and they stay there. Whereas with you, I mean, you're super productive, you're achieving a lot of things, you're achieving a lot of successes. So what do you think is the core thing that you've learned through all that?
Well, I would say the reason I think I managed to get out of it, two reasons. So when I was in grade two and I was diagnosed with arthritis, my dad told me, you can never use this as an excuse. So people will get, and I mean, it was a serious autoimmune disorder. So if anyone's going to have an excuse, it's having a serious autoimmune disorder or having some sort of illness. And he said, don't use it as an excuse. And so that pushed me in the direction of, it was a little, I went a little bit too far in that direction. So I was like, I will never use this as an excuse. When sometimes I should have spent the day in bed, like not pushing myself, right? So that was one thing that helped. And then the other thing that helped was when I was 23 and my skin stopped healing, I went to specialists and I was like, look, what's like help? Like what's happening to me? And I had a couple of people and they're like, well, it's like you're doing it to yourself somehow, right? And I was just like, that's absurd, because that is like, I was very anxious in those meetings, right? Like freaking out about this because it's a serious problem. And they're like, you know, you've got anxiety. Like it's, I was like, this isn't anxiety. And I completely switched from being, and from relying on other people, from thinking there's a doctor out there that's going to help me, which isn't an unreasonable thought, because sometimes that's the right way to go. But I completely switched that around and thought, if I don't fix this, I'm going to die. And then I just focused on fixing it. So I only had one goal. So all I did all the time was read. I started with the rash, right? So I was reading research papers, trying to identify what rash I had. And eventually I did it. It took like months and months, but eventually I found the rash, and that's what led me to gluten, and that's what led me to diet. But I think it was mindset, and it was just, I remember thinking, I'm going to fix this or I'm going to die trying. And so there wasn't a reality in my head where I either fixed it or that's what I just did with my life. Gotcha. And then once I switched that, I got into remission from this disease, these multiple disorders I'd had for my entire life in 8 months. It was absolutely absurd. I'd been researching, realistically, I'd been researching for about 3 years or 4 years off and on prior to that. But I went like full-fledged January, and I went into remission for the first time in September, and my depression lifted in November.
Okay.
So it was like, so a little bit, that'd be more than 8 months. But yeah, so mindset, I think, changed. I stopped relying on other people.
I hear that. What's it like having Dr. Jordan Peterson as a dad?
Exhausting. It's exhausting. Like people are like, oh, Jordan Peterson is your dad. Like, I was like, Jesus, I've spent the last 5 years just like trying to keep him afloat, kind of. Cause he's like, the change that occurred when he got more well known was so overwhelming that our family needed all hands on deck. And then he had autoimmune issues. So we had the same kind of dietary experience. He stopped taking SSRIs because he didn't know about the withdrawal. That completely screwed him up. He was medicated with benzodiazepines to cover that SSRI withdrawal. And that is not a good idea to do to people. That screws up people's brains. And some people are more susceptible to it. But if you take SSRIs for a long time and you suddenly stop and then you go into withdrawal and you add in a benzodiazepine, it just screws with your head. And so, no, for the last 2 years, I've been traveling around trying to find a doctor who knew what they were doing. And it was very difficult. Like I came across competent doctors, but realistically, I researched for like, that's all I did for the last year. I researched and researched and researched and finally came up with a protocol that worked. And now he's okay. But it hasn't, like, I think I'm lucky because he taught me a lot of things that would increase my resilience, probably. Like, I think that lesson about not using your illness as an excuse, it can be just absolutely life-changing for people, especially if they're diagnosed as children, but even as adults, like that's really something people should hear, is it doesn't really matter what happens to you. If you use it as an excuse, you're not
real talk.
And people can have terrible lives, like terrible lives, but using that as an excuse just doesn't work. So it's been a wild ride. I would not trade it, but I definitely wouldn't have said I wouldn't trade it, you know, for the last year or so. But
I understand that.
I'm pretty happy about where we are. He's doing really well. We've got tons of opportunities. I think we're scheduling a tour. So he's doing way better than I've seen him in a really long time. So it's awesome. Definitely been exciting.
Awesome. It's great to see him back in the public sphere, putting out a new book, doing podcasts again. I honestly, over the past couple of years, I mean, I'll tell you, real talk, my family has prayed for your family a lot over the last couple of years.
I think I have had so many messages about that. Like, yeah. My mom got this impossibly deadly cancer. Mm. And then my dad repeatedly almost died for a long time. Yeah. And I had so many people messaging me being like, we've been praying. And I honestly think we needed that, because the events in the last couple of years don't make sense any other way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting because, I mean, I first discovered your dad's stuff 5 years ago. Now it was before the Joe Rogan appearances and before it's the book and
Kathy
everything
kind of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well before that. But I sort of introduced my parents specifically, and also friends and stuff, to things later on. And it was interesting because I went to the, when he was touring with Dave Rubin, I got invited to the talk in Oxford, which is where I used to go to university. So I went to that, and I was sitting next to your mom and Dave
That's
Rubin's.
That's random.
I was sitting next to your mom and Dave Rubin's husband. So it was funny. So I was there, and then I was like, oh, okay. I've heard of Tammy. Oh, I've heard of Dave. Okay, cool. Like, I'm meeting you now. And so it's cool. It's just like, there's that kind of connection. And then obviously I was on your podcast. Was it last year? It was last year.
It was like right at the beginning.
Yeah.
That was when I was in Serbia or Florida freaking out. That was really not a good time. Things were not good.
No doubt. Anyway, I'm saying all that to say I'm happy that you, him, your mom, I'm just glad things are better, because, yeah, I don't know. It's a lot, you know. It was heavy.
It was heavy for
other people, so I can only imagine what it would have been like for you.
Yeah, it was definitely unbearable. I'm writing a book. I'm going to finish it. I think I'm going to finish it in the next month.
Okay.
It's called Could Be Worse. And it's like, it's pretty intense. I've written down, like, I think part of it is just me trying to organize the events in my brain, because I don't have, like, it's been such an absurd period of time for the last realistically my entire life, but really the last like 3 years or so. And I don't have a solid narrative about like why things happen and why things make sense. So part of the reason I'm writing is for me, but it's been brutal. I'm in September 2019 right now. So I've gotten to there, and I can only write once a week because I need a number of days to recover. And I'm just writing and bawling, and it's just like emotion I couldn't process at the time that I've just stored. It's brutal, but it's going to be a pretty interesting book. And I'm really glad when it's out of my head, but it's been a wild ride.
No
doubt. That's for sure.
What's your philosophy on why life throws these kinds of challenges at people?
God, I don't know. I've switched between them. Like, for a while there, I told you, I seem to err on the side of, if something goes wrong, it's my fault. And that is a very difficult like perspective to live with, but it also gives you more control than if you just blame everything else. So for a while there, I thought everything that was happening to me, I had done something to not deserve it. I think that sometimes you're not paying attention in certain areas of your life, and you might have valid reasons to not be paying attention. But then like life seems to just whack you with whatever you weren't paying attention to, and like 10 or 30 times more than you probably deserved. So for a while I had this, I don't know, philosophy maybe, that the aspects of your life you weren't focused on would just wallop you. But I don't think that's exactly right. I think sometimes it's just really unfortunate luck. Because, well, like, I mean, I had arthritis since the age of 2. What was I doing wrong as a 2-year-old? Probably not much. So I don't know, like, you could say maybe it's to test you. Maybe it's to, every time you overcome something, it makes you stronger once you get past the PTSD. But I have no idea. I can't, I can't, like I said, I don't have a narrative for the last like 3 years, especially. I've tried, and I've tried a lot. I've tried meditation. I've tried like high dose shrooms, like make something make sense.
Well, you know, it could also be time. You know, I think there are a lot of things happen in life where it takes time. It takes many years, perhaps in some cases, even decades, to get to a stage where you can look back on something and no matter how bad it was, even in a strange way, sometimes be grateful for it. Because like you said, that is where you get strength. That is where you get resilience, etc. You can tell when people have had, I don't know, I mean, having no adversity is potentially far more dangerous than having a lot of it, in the long run anyway. In the short term, obviously we don't want to deal with lots of problems and pain and suffering, but people who have had that in some way, shape, or form do tend to end up being the most rounded and successful and ultimately perhaps happy human beings, I think.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I think I'm too soon. I'm too close to a lot of the traumatic experiences. It's very recent that things have improved. But I do think time is a factor. And I think if you go through really difficult things and you can't turn and twist them around in your head and come up with a positive reason about why they happened, I think that they can just crush you. Like even if the experiences weren't fair and they really hurt you, if you can't turn it into something like, well, I learned, at least I learned this, or I needed that experience to learn this, which led to that. If you can't do that, then you're just going to end up feeling sorry for yourself. And that's, you know, using whatever experience as an excuse. And then that's just going to ruin your life.
Yeah. I think you have to control the framing of it. Look, the truth is, and I mean, certainly something your dad talks about a lot, not in these words, but sometimes life sucks. Sometimes, you know, life is a beautiful thing. Life is a wonderful thing, but, you know, it sucks really sometimes. Like, sometimes you'll just have a time where in one month, just bang, this happens. Then that happens. And you're just like, you know, I haven't done anything. But all these things are just colliding. And then also you have times where it's like, oh, wow, like this 2 month period here or this 6 month period, like everything's just on fire and you're killing it. Yeah, exactly. A question I did have for you actually is, it's been hard enough, certainly dealing with all of these things on a personal and a familial level, but what's it been like for you having it being so public?
Okay. So it depends what aspect. It hasn't been ideal. Like the health stuff, that hasn't been good. Like when we went to, I pulled dad out of a Canadian hospital because they were misdiagnosing him and they were going to do ECT. And that was going to destroy his memory and wreck him. And so I pulled him out of the hospital. My whole family, like we sat down, we made a decision, like everyone in my family, and we're like, yeah, this is the right decision. And we brought him to Moscow. And part of the reason I went was because I wanted to. And then because Andre is Russian, so he can communicate with the doctors, my husband. So I pulled him out and went to Russia. And it was so risky because the Canadian doctor said, don't do it. The medical procedure the Russian doctors did worked, but it was extremely dangerous. And I wouldn't recommend it to anybody unless they have no other option. And I thought, like, oh my God, if this doesn't, like, my whole family agreed on this and it seems like the best option right now. My dad's agreed, like he agreed as well. I didn't just tie him up and bring him there. But if this doesn't work, the entire world is going to hate me and I won't have a dad.
Damn.
And that month in Russia, like, I don't think I've ever been as stressed as I was in Russia. Like I was losing hair at one point. And you have to be very, very stressed to like shed hair as a human. You have to be pretty stressed to do that. Wow. So, and part of that was like, I don't know how this is going to turn out. And I don't know how many people are going to blame me. Like, this isn't just about me not having a dad and my family suffering. This is literally like, everyone's going to blame me that knows of my dad. Like, that's a lot to handle, but I decided to do it anyway because I thought it was going to work, and it did. Thank God, or I would be like somewhere with a shaved head and a changed name. but it wasn't like having everybody watch was not ideal because they didn't see the whole story. They didn't see what it was like there. They just saw like crazy daughter takes father to Russia to die. It's like, oh my God. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, it's not ideal.
Yeah. It's a weird one. I mean, how do you find it in general? I mean, do you like being a public figure? Because I guess in some ways, I think you kind of got dragged into it initially inadvertently. I think even your dad did, right? I don't know. Maybe you can tell me. I don't get the gist that he's someone who sort of set out to be as famous and well known as he currently is. If he were, I assume he probably would have pursued that several decades earlier. Yeah, exactly. So I think your whole family kind of got pulled into this spotlight to some degree, but I think it seems like you at some point made a conscious decision of, okay, actually I want to go out and create my own platform here rather than, you know, hiding away from it per se. Because, for example, I know you have a brother, but, you know, I don't know much about your brother at all. He's obviously a lot more private, et cetera. So there must have been a conscious decision there.
Yeah. Okay. So I wouldn't say that my dad was avoiding it because he had uploaded all his lectures onto YouTube. And some of them had a pretty good number of views. He'd been recording his lectures since he was 29 teaching at Harvard, right? So that was when that was way before YouTube existed. So he wasn't averse to the idea of being in the public eye, I don't think. The plan, nobody can plan to go viral. It's completely random. You would know that. So, that wasn't planned. But I don't think, he was thinking of going into politics. He's not anymore. He's thinking of going into politics since he was maybe nine. So,
oh wow, okay.
Yeah, so I think he has. It's more foreign to me than it was to him, but mine was more of a choice. It started off because I was experiencing these random food intolerances, and I couldn't find anything online leading me to any answers. I was like, "Am I just insane? Like, what is happening here?" So I started a blog. The blog got. And I started talking about these food reintroductions and these symptoms that were cyclical that I was keeping notes. I was monitoring every symptom every day and they were following these patterns. So I made it into a blog, Don't Eat That. My brother named that. So I went on a few podcasts because of the blog. So that started. Then dad talked about my blog on Joe Rogan. And that just increased traffic like crazy. And then when I went on the meat diet, I had articles written up about this crazy beef diet. So that went everywhere for a while. And I was like, oh my God, I was in BuzzFeed and things about this crazy beef diet. And then Rogan invited me on to talk about the diet.
Yeah.
And then since then I was like, well, part of it was, before I started the blog, I didn't really want to talk about it because my friends had no idea what was going on. I didn't really get a lot of support. I mean, even my family was like, well, it's definitely working, but this doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. I didn't have this team of people behind me being like, yeah, Michaela, cut out everything. That makes sense. It was all like, this is a little off, but you do you. And then I suffered for a year and I kept getting walloped with these reactions where I'd get arthritis again. My rash would come back. This horrible impending doom. And this was just happening every time I reintroduced something. And at one point I was like, you know what? I have to start telling people about this because if anybody else out there is having this kind of reaction, this is so isolating. It's driving me crazy. So I started it. I started talking about diet because I felt guilty not doing it. I was hiding it for a while, but I kept getting hit. And it was like I was getting, like I talked about before, it's like I was getting whacked with something that was talk about it. Even though that doesn't exactly make sense, but I had this guilt about not talking about it. I was shirking responsibility. That's what it felt like.
I get you.
Cause I was like, I'm not crazy. This is definitely happening. It's probably happening to other people. And I felt like I was shirking something. So I definitely chose it. Plus I like it. It was miserable. When we were trying to help dad by taking him to other countries, and that all that fell on me, so there's been miserable elements, but I mean, there's always going to be miserable elements to being more known. Mm-hmm. And the positive elements are so insanely positive that I wouldn't trade it. And I've figured out how to deal with it a little bit. Like, you block the people on Twitter who are like basement dwelling.
What's your block rule?
Like,
what's your block rule? How do you get blocked by Michaela? Not that I'm trying to, but.
Oh, I don't stand any of that. Like, I had a comment the other day which was just like, remember when you tried to lobotomize your dad? Like, what? That's just a comment. Yeah, no, those are the comments I get. Yeah. I'm like, you can just like, you've got 30 followers. Like, that's such a cruel thing to say, mm-hmm. especially considering he's doing podcast, like he's going on tour now. Like, that didn't happen. It wasn't remember when you tried. It was remember when you lobotomized your dad. So that was somebody who got blocked last week. Okay. But most of the people who get blocked are ones that either tell me I'm some sort of slut or tell me I'm wrecking my dad's life. Oh, wow. And it turns out there were only about maybe 15 people doing that, which isn't actually very many people. Mm-hmm. But if you get one person hounding you on social media, it feels like way more. So I probably blocked maybe 15 or 16 people, something like that. And then it was like, oh, Twitter's fine now. Yeah. So it felt like I was so sensitive because I was so like, there was a lot of responsibility pulling my dad out of a hospital. Like, that was a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. And so any kind of poke just exacerbated fears I already had and was like, I don't need that.
No. Some people are remarkably persistent with it. Like, incredibly, like they'll follow you even on multiple platforms, and they'll just they just wake up in the morning and they're like, okay, it's time, like I'm just gonna go after this person. It's so bizarre to me from a psychological perspective. I have this thing which is like, it's a gift and a curse, which is that I'm so interested in trying to understand the human condition, right? Like, whether it's just how and why we do what we do individually and collectively, you know, it's why I'm interested in philosophy, politics, religion, culture, all of this stuff, because I'm just trying to understand human beings. And there are certain people with certain mentalities where I'm just like, you know, I'm almost like I'm like studying the person who's trying to write. And I'm like, why are you like this? Like, what happened to you in your life that this is the way forward for you? You wake up in the morning and you're doing this consistently. It's not even just like, oh, this is a bad day. It's like, I'm going through your feed and every single thing going back for like a year. It's just going at this person, going at that person, going at that person. It's mm-hmm. just bizarre to me.
Yeah, I've been trying to. It took me until, I feel like, way too late in my life to realize that I wasn't like everybody else. Mm. Like, no one's like everybody else, but I'm definitely not like everybody else. And I really didn't realize that until I was like 26 or 27. I was like, oh, I just assumed everybody thought like me. So when somebody acted differently than I would act in a certain situation, I was just like, what are you doing? Like, it took me a really long time. Did you know that you were different earlier?
That's a fantastic question. I think I had sort of two realizations. I think I had one as a child. I had one in my childhood where I was like, okay, I'm different to most people, especially in my teenage years. One thing with me is I've always been very, very, I've always kind of been how I am. Like, I've always been very strong-willed and very like immune to peer pressure. So even as a teenager, when like, you know, people were doing different things, you know, like, I don't know, whether it's trying smoking or drugs or what, like, no, like, you can't get me to do something that doesn't make sense to me. Smoking a cigarette, wearing a mask outside, you can't get me to do it. If it doesn't make sense to me, just because other people are doing it, I don't care. That's not a reason for me. It has to make sense to me. And I've been like that since a kid. So I had one realization really young. And then I think, again, in my late 20s, especially when I started putting more of my thoughts out there publicly, because I've been on social media for a long time, for over a decade, and I've always used it to promote my music. But when I started putting more of my thoughts and ideas out there, I quickly realized, oh, wow, you know, and people started gravitating towards me just like, oh, my gosh, like, you're a voice of reason, you know, like someone who's making sense throughout this thing. And I was like, oh, OK, is the way I think that rare? Like, whether or not someone agrees with me on everything, I think I'm I'm sensible and rational, and like I can explain what I do without being overly emotive about it. It's just like, okay, I believe this and here's the explanation. But that was a second point where I realized, okay, I'm really different. And then over the past 14, 15 months, I'm like, okay, I'm really, 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 I'm really different. I go to the supermarket or whatever. I feel like I'm an alien or something. And I'm observing a whole different species now. Like the past 15 months have been wild.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of it's not exactly like I said, I didn't clue until I was like 26. I'd had people tell me that I was different for whatever. I don't know if that was a positive or negative thing. You're just like, Michaela, you're out there. Okay. Yeah. But I didn't get that until I was about 26. And then it's just been, more and more obvious. And then, yeah, I would say COVID, just because of the split in opinions and fear, who's fearful, who's not fearful. And there's a huge divide in people. It's very, very interesting. And then I've also noticed that I'm extremely open, which is just comes at a cost, right? Because it's like everything is a good idea. So like everything's a good idea. I have to, like, I've made a rule where I'm like, okay, I shouldn't, if I'm interested in that in a week, then I'll continue it. Okay. Otherwise I'll just be like, you know, I've got so many things going on, I have so many projects, and I'm like, it's too open. Like, hey, you want to travel over here? Yeah, okay, let's go. When are we going? Tomorrow? Okay, I'll move things around. Yeah. And so that's, yeah, I don't think that's, like, my brother, for instance, he's super smart, but he's like in Toronto, he lives near my parents. He has like a newborn and a dog and a wife, and they're all just pretty happy, like just being more stable, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think I would just go crazy.
Yeah.
Go crazier.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, people have such different personalities, and when certain, you don't get to see all sides of it until people are put in certain situations either. That's something I've really, really learned. So in the past 15 months, you've seen how people respond to whether it's governmental authority or the potential threat of a disease or a pathogen or sickness. And you were talking before about people's fear, and it's not just the fear, it's also what people are afraid of, right? So for me, from day one on this thing, I've had a much, much, much bigger concern, and you could say fear, of the level of governmental overreach and authoritarianism and tyranny than I ever did of any sickness or disease, right? And so that's the alarm bell I've been ringing. Whereas for other people, you know, the terror has been of other people, the fear of other people, right? Oh my gosh, everyone now is diseased.
Yeah, as if the government isn't other people. Mm. Like, the government isn't some overarching thing filled with geniuses. It's literally just other people who somehow have more power. That's not necessarily a good thing. Yeah. I'm with you there. For the first while, like, I was in Florida, I was living with my dad, and my grandparents were there.
Okay.
And so when this thing first hit, I was so paranoid. I was like, it was the first month, there were like statistics, no one had any statistics, right? And I was like, okay, you know, for the first, I think I joked about it for a week, and then I was like, okay, this isn't going away. And I was paranoid to the level of like washing grocery.
Oh, like, wow. Okay.
Because I was thinking, oh no, I was worried, because I was like, if this is something we don't know, we don't know what it could be like. And if I get it, maybe I'll be okay. But if I transmit it to I was living with 80-year-old grandparents.
Sure.
And my dad was like, he just had pneumonia. I was like, this is not good. That lasted for like maybe 3 or 4 weeks, like a reasonable amount of time that I thought, okay, where's the data? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on? There's no, like, this isn't that bad, or people would be dying faster.
Yes.
And then it was like, we were in lockdown. I can't remember how long we were in lockdown. It was a while at the beginning. And then my dad was getting, he was not doing well. And that was just so much worse than this, that I got less and less and less. And then it started to affect the economy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, so now we're seeing the economy being impacted. So it was within the first 2 months, I think, 2 or 3 months. I was like, okay, it's hitting the economy. This isn't good anymore. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's been 3 months and there aren't bodies in the street, then what are we doing? Mm-hmm. And then after that, I was like, okay, that's it. We've got some statistics. It doesn't look that bad. Like, I'm healthy. I'm not worried. Yeah. And so it did last. Like, I was very, very paranoid at the beginning because I was like, I can't deal with something on, like, if my dad, you know what I was worried about? This is what I was worried about. I was worried that my dad would get sick and we'd take him to a North American hospital. And because he was having such a difficult time with something called akathisia, so side effects from psych meds. Mm-hmm. I was like, if they use any type of sedative to calm him down in the hospital, he'll have a paradoxical reaction. And then they'll medicate that and it'll just spiral out of control, which is what had happened before. So my main fear was him getting sick, going to a hospital, and then just exactly what we had seen in December, having to take him out of the hospital again. So that's why I was super, super paranoid. And then my grandparents were there. So it was a bit complicated.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense. And I mean, look, everyone's got a different situation. That's the thing I've been saying for such a long time is that people have very different situations and different risk factors, right? So if you're a 20-year-old who lives by themselves, right, that's a different situation to even a 20-year-old who lives with older parents or grandparents, or let alone the parents and grandparents themselves, et cetera. But also, by definition, and this especially actually even goes for elderly people who are the most vulnerable, it's like, I'm also, you've made it this far, right? You've been doing risk analysis and like, all human beings we're self-preserving. Like we're not out here trying to die. So sure, you know, if some crazy mega disease came out, which is like, you know, got a 50% death rate and it's just blowing through the population, right? That's different. But it came out relatively early, certainly by this time last year, what the actual sort of statistics were and which demographics it was affecting. Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, given this data, like, we know who needs protecting. We don't need to do this one size fits all. Let's just flatten everything in order to, you know, in some feeble attempt to stop. And also just how ineffective it's all been. That's another thing.
Well, that mainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, if it worked, it'd be one thing.
Like, yeah, for
if
real.
It worked, then you could at least say this works. But instead you're saying, well, we have to just try harder. You guys aren't listening well enough. It's like, how many times do you have to do the same thing and make things worse before you realize you need a different like tactic?
Yeah, it's really
interesting. I'm so annoyed about Canada.
Oh,
because
tell me, because Canada's gone crazy.
Canada's gone completely nuts, and specifically, like Quebec has it bad, but it's like specifically Toronto. So like the one place like in the entire world that's really insane right now is where I went, which. It's like, that sucks. Like, did it have to be Toronto? Like, really? But like I said, their business is boarded up. There's way more homeless people. It's really sad. There are tents. It's just, and everyone's terrified.
Wow.
That's mainly it. Like, people are terrified. Although it's been going on so long that some of the terrified people who were also kind of annoyed about it have just switched over to being angry.
Gotcha.
The protests are spreading, but I mean they suggested that police stop people outside to identify why they're outside of their house, and the Toronto police said no, we won't be doing that. So there's a huge discrepancy happening right now, but things are happening like kids are being ticketed in parks. Like,
it's so strange.
And it's May. Like, we already had winter where everybody stays inside. Like, people have to get outside at some point, especially given the link between vitamin D and COVID. Get people into the sun. You don't really get it there.
Telling people to stay home was like the worst advice. Like, people, it should have been go outside, not stay home.
Yeah. And that's what the weird thing is. Like, we weren't that far away from a pandemic. Like, there was the Spanish flu, right? Mm-hmm. And that happened recently enough that we can kind of look at it, although it was way worse than COVID.
Oh, gosh. And no, you're not
way worse. Yeah. But they told people to go outside.
Hmm.
Go outside in the sun. Don't stay in.
But even in our lifetimes, there's been swine flu, SARS. Ebola didn't really hit the West.
That was scary, though.
But certainly SARS and swine flu and bird flu, those were all significant. And yeah, it's been really strange, and it's been so interesting to see how different localities have handled it, because it's almost like we're living in all these different realities. I mean, here in the UK, it looks like Canada's one of the places that's worse than the UK. But I mean, here, like, there's no epidemic in the UK. The numbers are already inflated, but there were three COVID-related deaths yesterday. 66 million people. And over 90%, I think over 90% of the people over 60 are vaccinated. Over half the general population. It's like, what are we, okay, guys, it's over. Nationally, I'm not saying in the whole world, because people are, oh, but what about India? What about India? I'm like, bro, we're in England. So I can understand, okay, India, but there's no epidemic here. Like, there's no epidemic. More people died from suicide yesterday. More people died from basically everything than died from this thing yesterday. So why is all the focus still here? Like, it's been so long now.
People are slow. Like, everything in the government is slow. Like, all of these changes are going to require meetings, and then the people who meet are going to have to go talk to the people above them, and the people above them are going to have to talk to the people above them, and then they're going to have to be like, well, you know, I don't know, we'll, maybe we'll give it a couple of weeks, and then that has to get put back down to the, like, minions, and then disseminated to the media, and then, like, everything is so slow. Yeah. At least you guys have the vaccination rollout. Like, Canada's vaccination rollout was, like, it was, like, third world country level. Like, what have you been focusing on the last year? Like, what we needed to focus on was getting vaccines into the country, assuming you're one of the people who are going to get vaccinated. That should be your goal as the government. Like, if there's a pandemic, focus on getting that into the country. They're like, oh yeah, well, we forgot. Like, sorry, we were focused on what? Sorry, we don't have any. How do you not have any? This was your one job. God.
It
seems to be rolling out in Canada. Like they said, everyone's eligible for a vaccine by the end of May. Mm. And so, you know, everybody who wants to get one is going to go get one. And I'm assuming they started with the older population. Yeah. So everyone above 80, 70, 60. I don't know what the vaccines are like, but at least they can get them now. So at least, you know, old folks will freaking be able to see their families again.
Yeah.
Hopefully soon. Like,
it's been wild. It's been it's been so myopic. It's been so myopic and tunnel vision, just like as if this is the only thing that kills people. And like, this is, I mean, they did some surveys, and it's interesting. I think something like, I saw this from the US, especially because there's such a partisan split on the issue. And it was something like over 50% of Democrats think that if you get COVID, that the hospitalization rate is 50% or more. Again, it's because of the news people watch, right? So if you've been sitting there for the past 18 months watching CNN and MSNBC and whatever, and having all your local politicians, you know, like pushing all these policies or whatever, people have been made to think that it's way, way, way more severe and deadly than it actually is. Like people have been scared out of their wits. And then there's like a whole other side. So it's almost like people are living in these alternate realities. You've got people in Florida, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, like they're just chilling and having pool parties and going to nightclubs and stuff. And then I've heard that in like New York, for example, it's even if you're outside without a mask on, like people are screaming at you and stuff. And I'm just like, that's so nutty.
I know. It's very nutty. It's very nutty being like, I don't really like this. Like this country isn't doing it for me anymore. Maybe I'll just go to a different country where it's not like this. Like, it's weird coming from North America, where it's supposed to be like land of the free. It's where people who have hard times go. And it's weird being like, okay, that's not looking so good anymore. I'm going to go elsewhere. Like we were in Serbia, and Serbia was great.
Really?
I was like, interesting. Oh, I don't want to go back to Canada. Like, that's just a weird, it makes me so angry because like, you've got everything. You have a country. It's running well. You have everything set up. It's peaceful. Like, it's hard to get to that point. And now, hopefully it'll just go back to normal, and maybe it will. But it's been quite a long time to shut down businesses. A lot of people have lost a lot of money.
Yep.
And people, I think, have lost a lot of trust in the government from both sides, right? So I don't know. I'm more pessimistic about the state of North America.
It's sad.
Why I'm in Dubai.
Yeah, it is sad because, like you said, I mean, the Western world has fought so hard to make so many strides, and
freedoms. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's crazy. You know, people used to fight for freedom. Now, if you fight for freedom, you're the bad guy. That's been the weirdest thing to me over the past years. Like, I've been trying to fight to uphold people's rights and civil liberties. And that's somehow made me the enemy to so many of my countrymen and even people overseas. It's like people are so desperate to lose their rights and to have everyone else is taken. You know, that person should have to do this and shouldn't be allowed to do this.
Lose your own rights. Like, if you want to lose your rights, go ahead. Like, lose your rights. Stay inside your house, freaking order food, have groceries delivered to your door, watch Netflix, wear a mask, do whatever you want. Just don't bug me about it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not bugging you about it. Maybe I'm bugging you about it on social media. I don't know. But like, just don't take away my rights for me. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I think you're going to have a lot of, I don't know. I think there's going to be some interesting migrations over the next few years. I think you're going to see a lot of people moving out of big cities and more into suburbia or the middle of nowhere. I see a big exodus from major cities that's going to happen. And I also think you're going to have an increasing number of people immigrating from so-called first world countries to so-called second and third world countries for a lot of reasons, especially people who are able to be a bit more nomadic like we are.
I mean, we're in a bit of a different situation, right? Because
we are.
Because we've got like online sources of income. And I'm not saying other people can't have that. I'm just saying lots of people don't have that.
Yeah.
You can have that. But it's hard and
a lot of people are even if people are still employed, I mean, a lot of people have shifted to remote working. And I've seen that in different countries, like in Dubai, in places like Barbados, I've seen that they're doing they're introducing new types of visa so that if you can, work from home. Yeah, exactly. So I think that hopefully will be, I guess, what is a positive that comes out of this, but it is disheartening to see countries which supposedly were supposed to be the bastions of freedom, UK, USA, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. I mean, people are there talking about, oh my gosh, Australia and New Zealand have handled it so well. I'm like, they can't leave their country. Like, you can't leave New Zealand. So I don't know if that's handling it well, making it illegal to leave the country. I mean, sure, you have a lower death rate. I mean, you've also got 20 people on an island in the middle of nowhere. So you can't really compare it to a lot of other places. But to me, I'm like, that's not good. Like, that's not handling it well. That's just going authoritarian, like properly. And people don't like the terms authoritarian and totalitarian. But if we're not using them now, like, when do we use them? Like, the government is literally telling you, you cannot go outside your house. You can't see your friends. You can't see your family. You're not allowed to hug people. You're not allowed to open your business. You can't travel. You can't leave. How is that not totalitarian? Like, that's literally, even during wartime, they don't have all these rules.
Yeah. Part of the reason we left too was because, you know, they opened up slightly and then they were like, oh my God, the second wave. And I was like, oh no. Like, right now, if you have business, you can leave the country to certain countries.
Okay.
And I was like, if they do another stay at home mandate, and because there were talks coming out and they're like, we're not doing the lockdown properly, even though we'd been in a stay at home mandate for like 3 or 4 months, which is a very long time. They're like, we're not doing it properly. We're going to have to impose stricter rules. And then they have this quarantine. I mean, you guys have a quarantine too. And and lots of countries have a quarantine, but they had this quarantine. And I was like, oh my God, are they going to shut down airports? Am I going to be stuck in this stupid city for, I don't know, 3 more months or 4 more months? I was like, I'm just going to go and wait because it'll probably fix itself eventually. It's just sad that it got to that point and that nobody freaked out about it.
Well, I think you made the right move. So Michaela, what else have you got coming up? So you're working on your book. Of course, you've got your podcast, which is going and growing and doing really well. What else do you have on the horizon?
Man, I have an app. So I'm working on an app with my dad and one of his graduate students, PhD graduate students, and it's on resilience. So what it does, I'm really excited about this. What it does is it helps you identify areas in your life that need work. So it'll do like, you know, how's your career going or your love life or your health, or there's like 8 categories to identify where you want to focus. And then it breaks that down further so you can identify, oh, you know, like my job is where what's causing most of my distress. And then it runs you through ways to solve your problem.
Okay.
It's also going to have a bit of a, it's going to be able to allow you to connect with someone so that you can have someone who is like your accountability partner, mm-hmm. if you want. Mm-hmm. But I think that it'll be out in about 4 months. We're calling it AIM.
AIM, okay.
And I think it's going to be good. It's still in the early stages. Like I just took a look at the wireframe and we're still going back and forth on exactly what we want to be in it. But we're very excited about that.
Awesome. And what about the book? Do you have a plan for when that's going to come out?
Well, I have a publishing company. It's Libra. And Tucker Max is like on the board there.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. He has this company called Scribe, but he has this other company called Libra. I'm going to go with them. Okay. They're just way better than regular publishers, in my opinion. So I'm going with them. I'm going to finish it up in the next month. Then it's going to be a hell of a lot of editing because I think half of it needs to be just thrown away. I need to give it to someone and say like, how much of this is interesting and how much of it is just trauma? Just like get rid of some. So that's the next step. In the next year, I should have an app out. I should have my book out. My podcast is growing. And then I'm still running my dad's 3 online products and social media and touring and books. And so it's a lot, but it's fun right now.
Awesome. Awesome. Michaela. Always good to talk to you. Really good to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And we will talk again soon.
We should. Thank you, Zuby, for inviting me.
Most welcome. I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame.